For August the 15th, 2025, we talk about the Battlefield 6 beta, Is This Seat Taken?, Grun, and much more. Welcome to Level 554. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We're trying something new. This is not being released. Nobody's going to see this, but we have video chat on just to see if it smooth some things out. It's very strange. I know what you all look like. It's just a, yeah.
What happened is beautiful people.
It's really solving the overtalk issue.
It is. Yeah. We're keeping that in. Moxie, continue.
Oh yeah. No, what actually happened is Gwen just threatened to, harm us if we kept making her, fix all of the overtalk, and we all fear her.
Gwen has literally never complained.
Yeah.
I know. I do.
But
not
it's
want...
funnier.
It is funny. It is funnier to pretend. I just do not want to put any evil on her.
Oh yeah. No, totally. Yeah.
Ben, what you been up to? You've been away the longest.
This will tie into the game story I have this week. I saw the movie Weapons over the weekend.
Fucking same. Yeah.
Yeah. It was not what I expected for a lot of it. First 30 to 45 minutes, like A plus, and the ending, S tier. So, Yeah.
No, it's one of those ones I don't want to spoil at all, but like I saw it too and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. I watched a few of the director's interviews afterwards and I didn't realize that a lot of the movie is based on his emotions after the passing of Trevor Moore.
Really?
Yeah. And so a lot of like the loss in the movie is kind of him dealing with like that loss.
Okay.
And it's like personifying different characters with what he was going through. So no idea.
Go ahead.
So where is the, like, I don't know, I'm one of those, like, triangle charts, Where is the balance of, like, horror, thriller, and drama on this? Because this is a movie that, like, I watched the previews, I'm like, I have no idea what that movie's about.
It's closer to comedy than any of those.
Low on drama, high on thriller, I would say.
And yeah.
Horror, I don't know, mileage may vary.
There's part of it that like it almost faints toward being like a conspiracy thriller
kind of deal.
Yeah. For people who lack the context on Trevor Moore, this is Zach Cregger, the director of Barbarian, who like previous to that movie was known for being kind of like the secondary guy in The Whitest Kids You Know, sketch comedy. And so the main guy that you see in all of those sketch videos is Trevor Moore. He passed away like 4 or 5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Enjoyable movie. My movie pass season's coming to an end, so I think I only got one or two left in me. But I think I've made good on it so far. It's been a good summer and good year for movies, I feel like.
Is this your decision or does Movie Pass like you paid for a certain amount of time or something?
I just picked it up for 3 months. Yeah. I think you can do 1 or 3 or a year, I think.
Cool. Dennis, how about you?
Oh man. I had a fun new experience this week, through a random series of events involving someone much younger and cooler than me. I wound up at a rap concert.
Okay.
So there's a kid I mentor. I say kid, he's in college, but and he'd never gone to a live concert. And so I was like, me and Jen do that all the time. It's super fun. Just let me know when there's someone in town that you like. I'll go with you. Mm-hmm. And he excitedly got me. He was like, hey, Lil Darkie's coming to town.
This is the actual the artist's name that is not.
Yes, it's the artist's name.
Yeah.
It is a rap/screamo act.
Okay.
That is so completely outside of what I would ever find on my own. But I'm like, all right, let's do this. Come to find out, like his albums and lyrics and everything are very, I'm trying to find the right word. Progressive is too soft, but aggressively against fascism and all the bullshit that we are seeing going on. Mm-hmm. So that was a nice surprise, because the guy looks, he's giving Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah. He looks like the core opposite of what you would expect from the name Little Darkie. Yeah. By which I mean, literally his entire body is painted white.
No. Yes. He's actually, I think he's Indian and from California. Mm-hmm. He's super cool guy. We actually went we were at Bogart's, which the other hosts will recognize. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So went behind where the stage door is, and he came out and hung out with everyone. Mm-hmm. It was just super cool, which is really funny to have this guy like acting insane on stage and rapping about how he butt-fucked Elon Musk, and then come out and it's just being like the sweetest guy hugging his fans.
Yeah.
But it's the first concert I've ever been to that had like honest to God moshing. And you could not avoid it, you know, like at just points throughout the song, it's like the Red Sea would part and everyone would kind of crunch up against a wall, which was mostly crunching up against other people crunched up against the wall.
Yeah.
And then when a drop hit or like they would count down or something and everyone would crash back together and just go wild. And you could not mosh this thing. So like I'm a big guy and the guy I was with is you know, about my size as well. And it was everything I could do just to like
hold your stay up, right?
Yeah. with that level of aggressiveness and craziness, though, the vibes were amazing. Like, mm-hmm. There was only one person that I saw get knocked down, and everyone around them immediately froze and was like, "Oh my god! Oh, here, let me help you." Hey, yeah, good, okay, yeah. And just like super, super good vibes. While screaming hyper aggressive lyrics, and all that, it was completely surreal. So, a good time. Like I said, something I never would have found on my own, but I'm happy I did find it.
Cool. How were you the next day after the concert? Was your body okay?
I was great. It felt like getting a little workout in. And I was talking, I was like, hey, I slept amazing. Like doing a workout right before bed. Yeah. And then there was probably enough pot in that room to get an elephant high.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that helped as well.
Now but, I'm thinking our million dollar idea is going to be like mosh fit.
Yes.
I'm just happy that Bogart's is still open.
Yeah.
And it's like the same old Bogart's. Like I was kind of curious, like, am I going to go in and everything's renovated? And it was straight out of what I remember. This is a venue, like, you know, like small size venue, just a big open area in front of a stage, that has not changed since our college years. It was great to be back there.
Were the bathrooms still deplorable?
I avoided the bathrooms, so
yeah, right. Probably good. Yeah.
So fun, kind of funny story. When I was down in Alabama, one of the assistant pastors lived for a while in Cincinnati. I'm sorry, I had a very late night last night. I'm struggling, but no, lived for a while in Cincinnati. I remember once he was talking. He's like, "Oh yeah, you know, we went to this like, you know, kind of independent theater in the area." I'm like, "Oh, Bogart's." It's just like,
yeah,
gives me the look.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the Midwest. You only get one cool place like that,
right?
Yeah. It was funny though, because like, I don't know, it was a weird small world thing, because like he was also like his dream job was to someday work at Crossroads.
Oh, huh.
Interesting.
Crossroads being kind of the like an Ohio area mega church
chain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's where I go, and I have great affection for it. But it's also one of those things where it's like nobody has a career crossroads. You go, you grind for a couple of years, and then it spits you out. So,
Totally. But yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
Yeah. So I went to Otakon this weekend. So luckily, I did not get like stepped on by any Metal Gears or anything like that.
You didn't piss yourself in a locker.
Exactly. no, just giant anime convention that kind of takes over the convention center here. It was a really interesting experience. I've gone to Dragon Con a number of times, and some smaller, very local cons, but this one was very much anime focused, and so much more like, man, I don't even know, like, I want to say something to express like the degree to which there were people that were into just super obscure anime stuff. The problem is it was so obscure that like I have no idea. But it was very cool. I went to a panel that was like going through a whole bunch of different like yokai, and then like, and this is the monster from Monster Hunter that's direct reference to it, which I was actually surprised because I was expected to be like, some of the fairly obvious thing where it's like, oh yeah, the Chinooki monster is based on Chinooki. All right, yeah. Kind of could have seen that. But no, it was like, oh yeah, the Chinooki monster is based on Chinooki, and its name in game is actually the name of like the city from a famous like ancient Japanese novel about Chinooki. So all this sort of stuff. I know. It was really cool thing. It was actually kind of fun going and kind of being there just for the vibes.
But
it was pretty good. A lot of great cosplay. I'll try to drop some pictures in the level channel. I think there are a ton of really great like Dantes and ladies and stuff like that. I think my favorite of that was the dude who actually committed to like carrying an entire Dante arsenal.
Oh god.
Yeah. Juliet Moon pointed out actually even Dante doesn't do. Like Dante canonically has access to hammer space.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find hilarious.
Did they have a Cerberus?
No, they did not have a Cerberus, unfortunately.
Dang it.
What weapons is the Cerberus?
That's the Trichucks from 3.
Okay.
Yeah, no. The three-section staff. Yep.
Is it a three-section staff, or is it like three ends on a ring?
Oh, if it's three ends on a ring, that makes even less sense. But I think my favorite was, and this one I have to do a picture to do it justice, but there was a guy who had like full-on samurai armor, except it was like Magikarp themed.
Okay.
And just, I mean, it was on point. It was really well done. So so whole thing was a lot of fun.
Nice. So Cerberus is three nunchuck terminuses attached to a central ring. Yeah. Did you end up doing cosplay? Because I know last week you were talking about maybe possibly doing something last minute. Or
no. I ended up just kind of dressing up, kind of gothy. Some fun stuff like that, but not a specific cosplay. Yeah, I need to figure out, unfortunately, the only thing I have that is kind of anime themed is I have a bunny girl outfit that is like Umbreon colors and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But that requires me to wear a great deal of fur in the summer.
And, yeah, probably DC is not the place to do that.
Yeah, and also a lot of makeup. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that would probably not be great.
The one I really want to do next year, I've got some friends that might be interested, is do a group cosplay of some of the characters from Tactical Breach Wizards.
Oh, God, that would be really good. And yeah.
And it's something that's like would actually be pretty easy to do because all the tactical gear from it you can just buy.
Yeah, you can just get that at like an Army Navy.
Right, exactly. You
gotta save up for the window budget though.
Yep.
God, oh man. So do you just like draw straws to see who gets to be the traffic wizard?
I mean, that is definitely the choice role.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did see one person dressed up as a Navy SEER. Which was pretty good.
Nice. Cool. Well, I mean, so mine was going to be talking about going and seeing Weapons, because that was the only unusual thing. But I will say, I've got some news. Watch out for Fireballs is going to be at Portland Retro Gaming Expo again this year.
Hell yeah.
When is that going to be?
That is October the 17th through the 19th. Yeah. So we're not going to have a table. We're going to do kind of like we did with Midwest Gaming Classic, going out there, giving our panel talk, and both Gary and I are going to be on the Retronauts panel as well. Mm. So it should be a good time. It's the first time we've done a show there in a while. So I'm super excited to get back. Portland's a cool town. It's good.
So you guys have guested on Retronauts before, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Several times.
Specifically at the Portland Retro Games Expo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
So I'm curious, like over the years, Watch Out for Fireballs has taken more and more of a creative approach to retro, quote unquote.
We don't even claim to be retro anymore.
As the same happened to Retro Games Con, or
it's more general purpose. Like most of the vendors are retro, but like even you know a lot of the like the big booths, big tables, they've got bins of you know modern shit there too. Nice. So like yeah, like the thing that makes it a Retro Game Con is like the big free play arcade and pinball. Kind of stuff. Everything.
I feel like the scientific definition is once you surpass a certain number of Vectrex machines, it becomes a RetroCon.
Yeah, there's like a person waiting there with like a little like clicker counter. Like, okay, that's our fifth one.
Also, Moxie, we owe you an apology. Cerberus did return in Devil May Cry 5 and had a three-section staff mode. So
gotcha. Okay.
You remember correctly.
Ben.
I was going to say, I feel like Portland is like offers a lot of support for that kind of convention like naturally as well with some of the things that are there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely easier to find like stuff to do, like arranging a meetup for that. Which there will be a meetup that weekend. Will be easier. And I don't know, for me, it'll be great because I just get we don't even have to pay for a hotel. I just get to stay at Gary's place. So
hell yeah,
man. Yeah. The October though, that is like the month that literally everything is.
Yeah, that's true. Oh well. That's the one I'm committed to anyway for the October thing.
So yeah. Are you going to cosplay to that? Because that would be awesome.
No, it's not really a cosplay heavy kind of thing. Like there are people who do cosplay, but it's not like all over the place, right? There's like a cosplay kind of concert, a cosplay competition, I think, kind of thing going on. But you're not going to see an awful lot of it. Although that is the place where I saw the little kid cosplaying as a Dark Souls mimic. Which was real fun.
That is.
So yeah, October 17th through the 19th, I've got to book a flight to get out there.
Sick.
Well, we've all done our little check-in here. Mandatory for the court. This is for our probation. So we've got to talk about games. And to do that, we're going to have to do the regular kind of show. What with the grinds, the multiplayer, and the unboss? And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the last period of time or so. Ben, I'm going to lead with you because you've been away the longest.
Yep. I just got one. It's a new game. I think I've talked about this, how I have like a gaming group from college that we do like a game of the month sort of thing with. Yeah. So this is the new one for this month. It's a game called Grunn, G-R-U-N-N. It is definitely like an indie game. I think it's like a solo dev sort of thing. It is kind of like a Outer Wilds alike, but instead of being a astronaut in a solar system, you are a Nordic person who's tending to a garden.
So okay.
If you can translate that idea from one thing to another, then you kind of have the idea for this. The other dimension to it is it's a spooky type game. The basic premise is you, instead of it being like a 20-minute loop or something like that in Outer Wilds, you're on a 3-day loop. And okay.
Like Majora's Mask.
Yeah, and the time will just progress by like 15-minute increments, and eventually you need to go to sleep, or otherwise spooky things will happen. And you're trying to solve like a mystery of what's going on in this place. And I think the conceit is like you're visiting like a relative's farm, that sort of thing. But yeah, very low budget, very low poly type game, but it's pretty creative, and I've had a lot of fun with it so far. The basic loop is just trying to figure out everything that's there and try and figure out where pieces kind of fit together. And so it's kind of akin to like a point and click adventure type game from the 90s, where it's like you get a lot of items, you see a lot of things, like how do you piece those sorts of things together?
Yeah.
And it has like a lot of like weird charm to it, being, I believe it's like a Danish game.
I love the animation for chopping grass. Like, oh. Sorry, this is the downside of
a video call.
I started emoting and that doesn't work
out. Yeah, you're doing like a hedge clippers kind of.
The immediate task that you get when you arrive is you need to clean up this garden. And so it's like a sort of house flipper, like paint washer type sim, where instead of like that sort of verbs, you have garden shears, you have a trowel, you have a watering can, that type of thing. And so you have an area, it'll measure the percentage of like how clean it is. And you can choose to do that if you want. But the place is kind of littered with these like points of interest and kind of, more like kind of like spookier things. There's like definitely some jump scares in the game. So it's kind of, you know, both charming and can be like kind of scary at times. So It's an interesting combination.
Yeah. This seems like people might call this like a cozy horror kind of thing.
Yeah. 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 I don't think you're going to be profoundly like disturbed by anything here. There's just plenty of times where stuff like jumps out of you at the screen. So
I do like the idea that, like, if you don't go to sleep, like spooky stuff happens. It's like, yeah, that's not supernatural. That's just sleep deprivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. 72 hours. Yeah.
And kind of an added benefit of playing this with a group of friends is like, when you get to walls at certain points, you can kind of ask for non-spoilery hints for like how to get past whatever you're stuck on, and that's been nice. But I think by and large, like, I've had a pretty good go of it so far. And like, I forget how many endings there are. I think it's like 11 maybe, and I've hit 7 of them already. But they also track things like how many areas you've been to, which kind of shows like, oh, there's still more to explore. And then there's also like how many items you found. And then one of the mechanics in the game too, is you'll find Polaroids littered throughout the map, and they'll basically be pictures of other parts of the map. And it may or may not have like elements that have changed. And so it's kind of like hinting to what you might interact with or what you might go to and do at a certain location. And so then they also track that as well, like how many Polaroids you've solved in the game.
Yeah.
I've probably played it for about maybe a week or two or so. I'd say I probably put in like 8 to 10 hours, and I'm nearing like towards the end of the game. I have like maybe like 2 or 3 threads that I'm kind of narrowing down on, but I feel like I've seen like the bulk of the content of the game. It's kind of like at an achievement hunting stage right now, where all the achievements are like visible for the game. And most of the titles will kind of be like, oh, I've noticed that like, Like, so for example, one of the achievements is like make popcorn, for example. And it's like, oh, I've seen a few different components around the map that might be related to that. So I think I have a good idea of how to do that. So whether or not that's enjoyable gameplay, I think it's up to like how much somebody likes to do achievement hunting, but
not.
Yeah. So you can skip that if you want, because I don't think that's as important as like the main story and like figuring out the main thrust of. No. There's like a central sort of mystery type question thing that you're trying to solve. So you can kind of choose to ignore those and interact with them if you want. But
does it make use of the time loop? Well, like, okay, you're in one place and something happens and then you can decide to be like, okay, well, you know, that person, where were they before? So on the next go around, you go kind of like trace the lines.
It's nothing too complicated, but there definitely is things where it's like there's events that happen throughout the time. So it's more like I can only do this at this day and at this time of day. And so if I want to do it, I need to plan around that for kind of like my schedule of this loop. Yeah. And I think other than that, there's a few things that where it's like that for this to happen, it requires 3 days of time. So you need to do this mm-hmm. the very first day if you want to try and finish it by the end of the loop. So there's a few things like that. Yeah. So there's like minor things like that, but don't go in expecting it's anything like super deep or super complicated like that. It is like a single developer, I believe. So
yeah. Steam failed me by not recommending this to me. Yeah. Kind of seem, you know,
yeah.
Seems like it's algorithm. Up my alley.
The kind of how we choose a game is like we'll make like a sheet at the beginning of the month and people will just throw in suggestions and then we vote on them. But mm-hmm. yeah, but so it's kind of like everyone will check out the games that are nominated. And so yeah, everyone kind of latched onto this one where it looked pretty promising. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's been good. It's even, I would say, Hex Crank worthy since it is yeah. like spooky enough. I think you could mm-hmm. make an argument for it. But
I looked it up on How Long to Beat. It says it's like 5 hours, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wish listed it.
Sweet.
Yeah. Grün.
Grün, which means green in German. So.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm thinking like, okay, if it's Danish, I don't know what it is. It's Norway. I don't know. All of that. Like it could be the Fae. The prominence of the garden gnome in this does start making me think of like, you know, Norwegian fairy kind of stuff.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that all you had?
That's all I got.
Cool. I've got two that are new to me. One of which that just came out this past week. So to get kind of the, man, what do I want to do here? I will do the most new one, the one that just kind of came out last week. Are you all familiar with Is This Seat Taken?
Mm-mm. I mean, no. When I get on the subway, but...
it's kind of related to that. So this is a puzzle game. It just came out on August the 7th. I think it was at like the Nintendo Indie Direct. It had been on my radar for a little while. It's just one of these ones that I just popped up on social media. I was like, oh, that looks really neat. It's this super cute logic puzzle kind of game that, like the title implies, you have in every stage a bunch of people who have very particular requirements about where they want to sit. And then a vehicle or a venue where you need to seat them with all of those conditions and dependencies kind of applied. Right. So to to pull early examples off of this, you know, like the tutorial is, okay, you have three seats in the back of a car, you know, just like a regular kind of, you know, sedan. You know, one person says like, all right, I want to sit by the window. And the other person says, I want to sit alone. So very clearly you put them both on either side of this. And it's like, okay, well, what order? So like, I want to be by a window, but this person wants to be next to me. So they're going to be in the middle, you know, et cetera. Starts getting more complicated when you start getting to an example like the movie theater, where you have, some families that are together that want to be there. And then like they, you know, for eyesight reasons, like, oh, I want to be up close, or I want to be up back, or like people who have popcorn.
See this person.
Yeah. Or obviously they want to be next to the, like kids want to be next to their parents or whatever. But then like there are people who have popcorn and there are people who want to steal popcorn. So yes. They need to be like right next to them. So like, how do you arrange their kids around them? And this has popped up a couple of times. There are some people who are stinky and there are some people who do not want to be around people who stink. Yeah,
this is hitting too close to home now.
The people want popcorn. They're just trying to get the achievement.
Yeah, the achievement. What?
From my conversation or my game?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sorry. Okay.
So, I was thinking if you don't know who the stinky person is, you're the stinky person.
Yeah. If everybody's steering clear. But it's just a bunch of different situations like that where, you know, like you just have the people, they all have their conditions and you can kind of stage them down at the bottom and then figure out how you want to place them. So all of them are in there and all of them are maximum happy. Right. And see, it has this, very cute kind of, almost like crayon or chalk, visual style. Ben, you had something you want to say?
Oh, I didn't. I accidentally pressed the hand raise button.
You accidentally did. We didn't establish that as etiquette. Moxie, you wanted to say something?
I was going to say, I would love... press
the hand raise button first.
God damn it, Dennis. Not even as a joke. Sorry. Now they can see me get mad.
Yeah. That only makes it more fun.
I would love to see if they... if they came out with the expansion where instead the goal is to like make one person as miserable as possible.
Oh man.
It's like you're trying to get like the white supremacists to leave the theater. So you have to like put the drag queen next to her.
See, I went like some people are stinky and some people are masochists.
Yeah.
And some people are stinky masochists.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to go with there needs to be Forrest Gump themed expansion where just there's a little girl in all these where that just says seats taken.
So are these multi-stage, like I'm looking at the bus coming into the stop and I see a little meter at the top. Does it do like the, okay, well at this bus stop, three people get off, but four people get on and all those four people want to sit by a window or so what have you. Like once you've solved it, is it totally next puzzle or does it build on itself?
I've not run into any that build on themselves. Each time it is, you have the setting and then there's like three or four, just like several different sets of conditions and different people. And like each of the like locations that you're going to, there's like a little story in there. So like the first one is you're in like Spain and there's like a film festival thing going on. So it's like, you know, some people are riding a taxi, some people mistake a limo for a taxi and you've got more seats to work with in there. And then like the end of it is the movie theater where all the people kind of have gotten to. So like there's a little bit of like narrative, light narrative to this, but it's cute.
Yeah.
It does look very cute.
No.
Do their shapes inherently mean anything? Because some are like pentagons, some are squares, some are circles.
No, not as far as I can tell. I don't know if you end up with shapists at all.
It's like a Flatlander thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so like this is super, super lightweight and I mean not as like, you know, as far as logic puzzles go, it's no, no Uber Din or anything. I just think it's a cool way to scratch. It's a cool way to scratch a brain itch that feels very much like Picross to me, actually.
What's the playtime on the entire game?
I haven't beaten it yet. Like there's, I don't know. It seems like there are like six different locations you can go to and each of them, you know, like the Barcelona one seems to have like four or so. So like, it seems like there's plenty of, you know, a good amount of stuff, to it at the very least. I think it's too recent to have an accurate, how long to beat to it.
Is there only one viable solution for each problem or can you solve it in any number of ways?
Because I'm so early, I'm at a point where you can solve it in a bunch of different ways. I'm pretty sure later on it's going to be kind of more sprawling.
You can get the real Karens of the shape world.
Yes.
This almost reminds me of what was that game where like you have the like a couple of comic panels and you have to place the people in order to make the story play out a certain way?
Framed is the series of games that you're thinking of. Yeah.
I feel like the indie game plays that you have to, you get some new mechanic when you beat the game and that recontextualizes the entire game. And then you can go back and solve the puzzle in very sadistic or specific ways.
Yeah. I'm going to go into the challenge mode where they make it into, you know, like a Steven Sausage Roll level.
All stinky people. Yeah.
Everybody stinks. Yeah.
I referenced the Meat Tower IRL this past week, and then I had to explain it to somebody of what that meant. The Steven Sausage Roll Meat Tower.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even I didn't know. I just know that as a puzzle fuck challenge game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had to take a guess without context as to what a meat tower meant, I think I would go to some very different places. So
I assume it's something that you get like a Brazilian steakhouse. That sounds like a thing.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a much more innocent answer than I would have
done. Yes.
Yep.
I figured those bases were covered and I'm hungry. So I just went with
one. Hey, I didn't say it didn't involve being hungry.
Yeah. Any questions about Is the Seat Taken? Just a fun, lightweight little logic puzzle game.
Yeah.
No more. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I've been playing, a little bit out of character for me, are any of you familiar with Merge Maestro?
Mm-mm. I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
I saw people posting about this on Blue Sky, and I was like, oh, this is an iPhone game. There's a Steam version as well. I might as well pick it up and try it out. It's a roguelike... It calls itself a roguelike merge builder. Is anybody familiar with a genre of games called merge builders?
No.
Only insofar as they showed up in ads for the longest time.
Yes. Where it's like
I don't know if they actually exist. But like the fake game AI generated ads have them.
Yeah.
This isn't the thing where it's like you combine two things and then it makes a third thing or something that's like completely novel.
Yeah. So what this is, it is like a little, it's like a battler. Okay. In waves, different enemies, all the icons are based on like emojis. Different enemies will kind of appear and get queued up. And then you have kind of like eight slots for different kind of like tiles that you want to play that start just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And when you merge two ones, it becomes the two tile. And when you merge two twos, it becomes the three, et cetera. With each wave, you get the ability, like it'll give you an option of three different little icons to take to replace any of those slots. And the little icons are almost like, cards, like in a Monster Train, or a Slay the Spire, you know, kind of way where like they'll have different effects, like, you know, on merge, it does this particular amount of damage, or when you place it, like when it appears, it does this particular kind of damage. Or like, you know, when this is destroyed, it creates these other, you know, these other things. And this can get super broken. You know, to the point where like you can specialize your build to be entirely around destruction stuff. And all, you know, it's all like these little, like all of the undead, icons that you get, like vampires and crypts and skeletons and stuff like that. And then just like, you find like one particular piece that just can destroy stuff on command. And suddenly it's not a bad thing when something gets destroyed by an enemy effect. It causes chain reactions chain reactions of damage. On the base difficulty, the enemies just have increasing amounts of HP, but like on like the standard one, that's not like the super chill mode, each enemy type has a different kind of like special effect to it. So it's like, oh, this can only take one damage at a time. So like for the portion of the waves when they are showing up, I need to specialize in multiple attacks, because, you know, if I do all the damage in a lump sum, it's not going to take, you know, or like, you know, conversely, you get ones that ignore like the first 4 points of damage or ignore the first attack. And
I guess I gotta ask, is Terrence Howard behind this game since 2 + 2 = 3? Or
no, Terrence Howard is not involved.
All right, just checking.
Yeah, it's not addition, it's leveling up, right? Mm-hmm. And once the number tile is changed, you can change it again. So the idea is that strategies that work early on are not going to scale up and damage enough to actually get rid of the enemies before they do damage to you, to your health bar as it goes along. As a roguelike, the individual rounds, I think that a run of this lasts 15 minutes. So it's super lightweight. And there are tons of little tile sets that all have their own, synergies or play styles with them. And you unlock them as you go. It's a really neat little, purely mechanics, just synergy finder game. That is real cool, for different kinds of builds, where you place the tiles on the little 4x4 grid matters more than other ones.
The game I was trying to think of was Infinicraft, if people have heard of that game online. This looks like Infinicraft mixed with that was Pet Animal Fighter auto battler sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was walking into this and I was like, am I going to bring this? Am I going to just give a really belabored description of what this is? And obviously I just did that, but somebody's going to say, oh yeah, that's an auto battler. You just found this genre that everybody that all of you have been talking about.
Super Auto Pets plus Infinicraft is how I see this. It looks great though.
Yeah. I don't know if there's an Android version, but it is on Steam and it's $3. Even the iOS version is free, and the full unlock on it, it's $2.
Hmm. Nice. I'm only finding Infinicraft as a Minecraft mod.
I posted this, or I posted a link for it on the backstage, I think.
Yeah.
It's Infinicraft.
Okay.
You should look at this after we finish recording, because I feel like you can lose hours to this.
Yeah. that's the procedural combination of things. I combine fruit and a barrel and it makes wine, and then I combine is that what that is?
Yeah, you start with four elements and you can get to Luke Perry eventually if you combine things in a weird enough way.
I just realized with the advent of AI large language models that you can literally have infinite craft.
Yeah, I think there's AI in the Infinicraft. Not that I'm trying to condemn it or anything, but I think it is just proc gen kind of stuff. Moxie, it looked like you were going to say something.
Oh, no, I was just doing a goof about everything eventually becomes crab.
there was a version of this that I remember from when I was in high school. So definitely before any kind of procedural generation.
Hmm.
But obviously it's evolved to have that. So very cool.
Yeah. It's cool. I like it. It's really breakable. It's also not very hard. I think that my first run on the easy mode, only I had one run where I was learning it, and then it was by the skin of my teeth, but I ended up beating it the second time. And they're kind of Balatro, they're, instead of having different decks, different board colors have different effects on them and stuff.
Yeah. What's the roguelike aspect of this?
It is just that if you end up dying, all of your selections for the icons go away, you lose all your progress and you have to start over again. Okay. But as you go, you are unlocking different kinds of boards to play on, and also unlocking, different, tile sets that you can play with that'll have different effects.
Gotcha. So for the same wave or whatever, you can choose a new board and a new tile set to fight against it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
For an individual run. Yeah. It's neat. I don't know. It's a fun little fucking around on a phone game.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah. If there are no more questions about that, the only other thing that I had is I finished Look Outside, but I've sung this game's praises a lot and nothing's changed. The ending fucking owns this. That game is special. I really enjoy it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I feel kind of bad for this game. Sorry, I was muted. I feel kind of bad for this game because this feels like a game that would be one of those, like, man, I don't know what to compare it to, but you know, one of the end, a Hollow Knight or a Shovel Knight or something like that, yeah, where it's just like
any knights.
Yeah, any knights. No, like, it feels like one of the indie games that would be like universally like, oh, this is a game you can recommend to everyone. Except that it's such a niche genre.
There were people who said, oh, all of this seems really cool, but some of the body horror was just too much of too much for them. Like, somebody was watching in like a section that had way too much to do with teeth growing where they shouldn't, and that like very specifically squicked them out.
Yeah, it feels like an offshoot of like Cthulhu type stuff where it's like you have to be really into it. But yeah, I think it looks sweet. But
yeah, I definitely feel like this belongs like in a conversation with, you know, stuff like, it feels like it would appeal to a lot of the people who like Undertale or Deltarune or something.
Yeah,
like that.
That's actually probably the best comparison. Yeah.
I mean, especially with just like the kind of cute characters that you get or run into, you know, that you end up helping, you know, people who are transformed but are really nonchalant about it, kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I adore this game. I really want to see what else that creator does.
Yeah. Wild. They made it in under a year as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. No, it was like a 4-month turnaround from a Game Jam game to full shipped product.
And it is not a short game.
No, there's a lot to it. A lot of different endings. Like, I think that during my ending stream, I did like 4 of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is there one that it's like, okay, this one's probably the canon one and the rest of them are funny offshoots, or?
Like, the ones that I found were like, okay, different ways of fucking up on the way toward getting like the good ending, you know, canonically, you know, the best possible outcome for the world, if not for your character. And, you know, like different decisions you can make at the end, or, you know, if you, cause like part of it is you've got to find 4 different images, like depictions of the thing that's outside that you're not supposed to look at. Mm-hmm. And you can like fuck up which ones of them you provide for it. That can also mess things up. So like all of them seem to be like plausible outcomes, but only like one of them is you did the right stuff and made the right choice at the end.
Hmm. Very cool.
Yeah. So yeah, that was Is the Seat Taken, Merge Maestro, and Look Outside.
A good crop.
Good crop. Moxie, I want to hear from you.
Yeah, so the main thing I've been doing is continuing on with the summer event in Fallen London. So for people who might not have heard last time, basically this summer event, the plot line is that Hell has disappeared, which this game takes place like near the center of the earth. So like normally Hell is just a short drive away. But it has disappeared, and that has caused like time and space and cosmology and ontology to fall apart.
Like there's a lot of stuff with causality getting fucked up.
Exactly. And so you have to go solve basically all these puzzles to put everything back together. And that's what I've been doing. There's some just a bunch of funny things, and these are all going to be spoilers, but by the time this episode comes out, I think there'll be like 1 day left in the event or something. Maybe more, I don't know. But one of the events is you basically realize this option that like, oh, causality's fucked up. I can just like cheat death. And so you in this game, you have several what called menaces, which are sort of, I don't know, inverse HP. If they get too high, something bad happens. So there's like nightmares, which leads to you going insane. Scandal, which leads to you being exiled. suspicion, you go to jail, and then wounds, you die. And you basically figure out that, oh, I can just, through the shenanigans of everything that's going, like, trade off my wounds for these other qualities.
Okay.
But it turns out that if you, there's a thing where basically you have to orchestrate to trade off your wounds, and with everything else close enough to the maximum that it makes you fail every other possible way things can go bad. So you basically go insane, go to jail, and get exiled.
Okay. And but you're not bleeding out anymore, so it's hard to say if it's good or bad.
Right, exactly. Well, and with that, it gives you like this stat where it's like, oh yeah, you've now kind of broken causality. And so later on, there's a thing where like there is this like you get back into hell, and there's this like raging inferno, and you see something shiny in it. And so if you've accomplished this, you know, you have the option to try to get it. If you haven't done this, you just immediately die. If you have, it's like, well, you've already screwed things up so far, I guess you're all right.
We're gonna let you have the shiny things.
Exactly. There's also,
is that the guy that went to insane exile jail?
It sounds like a narrative in overflow.
Yeah, very much so. There's also a thing where like you have an option to some of these get super obscure. You have an option to start suspecting that there might be an elephant.
Just around?
Yeah.
Is this like a don't think literally, about elephants thing?
Or? Yeah.
Yeah, literally, that is the sole like justification. You start suspecting that there might be an elephant and have the option to look for it. And if you just happen to have a bunch of dead rats in your inventory, you'll do like a weird like three blind mice thing and get a companion that is an elephant that technically has not been proven not to exist. Like, that's literally what it's called.
Uh-huh.
Moxie, how common is it to have a bunch of dead rats in your inventory?
I mean, this is like Victorian era London, so depending on your social class, that might be what you eat.
I didn't realize that a game existed that was made by pure mathematicians. So,
Dennis over here. Yeah, rich Uncle Pennybags letting rats go to waste.
No, I think it's actually like what, like in the Victorian era, being a rat catcher was like an actual job, I think. And so mm-hmm. I think it's a rough, I don't know. But by far the most interesting is the, in this setting, you have the Masters of the Bazaar. So these are, you know, the Bazaar is this, giant, shop that, through dark packs, came into ownership of London and, moved it down to the underworld.
The original title of the game was Echo Bazaar, right?
Correct. And the Masters of the Bazaar are sort of these vaguely humanoid, cloaked, like Lovecraftian creatures that each are responsible for some aspect of trade within London. So like Mr. Irons is in charge of heavy industry and weapons. Mr. Hearts is meat and murder. Mr. Wines is drinks. Mr. Eaton does not exist, and it would be unwise to inquire further.
Okay. Like that elephant.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But with causality going bonkers, you basically go into the bazaar and find that like a group of street urchins have become the masters of the bazaar. Ooh. And like each of them is like a weird reference. So like instead of Mr. Wines, you have like Mr. Lemonade. There's like Mr. Swears, Mr. Hot Cross Buns, like just weird stuff. And basically, you know, sooner or later, this reality bubble is going to collapse and they need to be back inside it when it collapses, or, you know, something bad might happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
However, the problem is they've all decided they want to play a game of hide and seek.
Okay.
And so you have to
Priorities.
Go. Yeah. You have to go find them. And however, some of them is, you know, some of them is just literally like, you have to go to a, you know, obscure location, the game. One of them is you have to get 21 blunderbusses in your inventory and fire off a 21 gun salute. In which case, like the, because causality, the guns will fire without you pulling the trigger, and the urchin comes down. It's like, hey, we can't have that. And proceeds to pull all the triggers for you.
So if you have 21 dead rats in your inventory, you can suspect that an elephant might exist. If you have 21 blunderbusses, you can make sure that elephant doesn't exist.
Exactly. But then it gets even weirder. Like one of the urchins is in the help section of the game. just okay. Stuff like that.
Like hiding in the interface.
Yeah, exactly. So there's all sorts of weird stuff. It's very adorable seeing because it's very much trades on like these are powerful enigmatic creatures. So what would a Dickinsonian urchin think behaving enigmatically looked like?
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a weird marriage between like D&D and SCP.
Yeah. And this is one of those things. The game's always been weird. This is particularly weird.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say the last thing that was kind of bonkers is I mentioned last week one of my favorite characters is this bishop that just is like super burly and just goes around like wrestling people and stuff like that. And for some reason, one of their writers decided, like, hey, what if we give him a tragic backstory? And so you basically find out that, like, his whole thing is, like, he's super, you know, obsessed with being strong and stuff like that. Because when hell invaded, London, like, he was in a platoon and was, like, the only survivor. And so, like, all of his weird behavior throughout the entire game has just been, like, survivor's guilt.
Okay.
And, it's actually surprisingly, heart-wrenching. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised because this is the game that literally previously made me cry during a story about the guinea pig version of the A-Team. So, like, this is par for the course for them, but I still was not expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I've got. It's been a very strange trip.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
So you just have, like, you have to rush for the, like, to get as much of this done during the event as possible.
Exactly. I will say it's kind of a combination of they have for almost all of these things. They have once enough players have solved the puzzle, they then provide an escape hatch. Okay. So for example, there was one of them that you have to do a certain thing to build up like to get this item called like condensed time. Mm-hmm. And in order to make it be the right day, you have to, like, whatever day it really is, you need it to be Tuesday. And so you can gift this item to another player in order to get a negative day.
Okay.
But, like, now that enough people has it, you alternately, if you just get 7 of the day items, you can just say, basically, solve the puzzle for me. One of the cool things with
Does it then tell you how it actually solves it? Or is it like, well, you solved it, but you don't get the satisfaction of knowing what happened?
So actually, in true Fallen London fashion, it actually just has like a cheeky version of like how you do it. You know, that usually involves you just realizing that like, oh, all of this causality stuff is operating on like House of Leaves, like it does whatever I expect it to do thing. Yeah. So if I just decide that the puzzle is solved, it will be.
Cool.
One of the interesting things with this is that, though, a big motivating factor in this game is a bunch of these traits you're getting. So like the one I mentioned that from cheating death, you know, that will stay in your character's like stat block after the event.
Okay.
And there's a big tendency, you know, at random points in the game, you'll have your normal actions you can take, and they'll be like, if you happen to do this random thing at some point, like you can draw on that. And so a lot of it, the way it works is like, it's not hard to like beat the puzzle and get the reward. It is difficult to get the permanent like stat thing that, you know, if you care later on about like being able to kind of flex on the story.
Yeah, yeah. And just like a way for your character to have medals or trophies.
Exactly.
I think I would be more interested in just seeing a map of all those options rather than actually like playing to get them. Just like what is the most obscure or least chosen solution that actually is in the game?
Yeah.
That like only 3 people have seen, but
I mean, to give you an idea, I made the joke about like Mr. Eaton doesn't exist and it would be unwise to do that. Like in the game, if you do insist on like decide I want to investigate that, that will involve you spending like dozens of, if not 100 hours building up this character, only to ultimately have to like sacrifice them. And it's straight up like, if you make this option, you won't be able to play this character anymore.
Oh,
so like
wow.
they have some like at one point you have to, in the game, you have to like get married and then kill your spouse to like get to this thing, like all sorts of weird stuff. So yeah, there are some very obscure options if that's your thing.
Yeah.
Craziness.
So
nice.
That's Fallen London.
That's all of it. did you have anything else?
No, I did not. So
sorry. Dennis, round us out.
Yeah, so I want to check in on the retro front with our N64 continuing to get of love. Unsurprisingly, the main N64 gamer in our house has quickly become Jen.
Okay.
And I'm beginning to suspect that it was given to her sibling as a way to quarantine it versus any kind of generosity.
This is to protect
Jen from herself.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like an Edgar Allan Poe, like, oh no, you done fucked up.
I woke up at 2 in the morning last night and heard a woohoo from downstairs.
Yay.
So she's deep into Mario 64 right now. Mm-hmm. And of course doing battle on the track in Mario Kart. It seems like Mario 64 is the game that the kids are gravitating to the most.
Yeah.
And there is much argument, as you know, Jen is kind of pioneering ahead of them, and then they want to like take credit for figuring something out. She's like, well, you watched me figure that out, so I want some of the credit. Yeah.
Well, have you told them like what you really need to do is figure out how to unlock Luigi?
Ooh, I like that.
That's
That's cruel.
I'll let that come from you. You can plant that seed.
Yeah.
If you want to see the maximum amount of evil, look up the Mario 64 iceberg.
Okay. I'll have to check it out. Mario 64, it is rare that there is not someone playing it up on the screen once all our stuff is done for the day. I also at our local arcade picked up Rogue Squadron and played the first couple of levels of that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember specifically if I had played it before or not. And then I booted it up and the memories came flooding back.
I love that game as a kid. Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is mind-blowing how good it feels to be piloting with a single stick.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they make that feel natural and like it's got a good flow to it is just mind-boggling to me. It doesn't matter how bad everything looks. You are right in the cockpit of that X-wing or A-wing or what have you.
Yeah.
It's just really cool experience. I went and looked up the manual for the game, and that took me down a whole nother rabbit hole. Because man, is that from a different time?
I don't remember what the manual was like.
So they have extensive character bios. We're talking like three paragraphs of text mm-hmm. for every single person in Rogue Squadron. Not only are there multiple potential controller layouts,
mm-hmm.
But each of them is detailed in the manual and named after one of the pilots.
Okay.
So just like, you know, an insane amount of space used for just all these little touches.
Mm-hmm.
There is a literally 8-page section that just details each of the missions.
Yeah. Like
gives you the overview of every single mission you're going to encounter in the game.
Mm-hmm.
This makes me nostalgic for like the old Star Wars universe, like before it was owned by Disney.
Oh yeah. My God. I miss it so bad. Yes. It's
the continuing adventures of Wedge Antilles.
So you can go back. You just need an N64 and a Rogue Squadron cartridge. But that was really fun. I already am getting the itch of like, okay, I've gotten a bronze medal on everything I've done so far. So I gotta go get those higher medals.
Yeah. Some of those are really hard.
Yeah. Well, and I know that there are like secrets, and I think the manual talks about this. There's secrets in every level that like are power-ups to your weapons that will last, you know, ongoing then. So it's like right now I'm playing with the worst possible gear. And I need to just go and like derp around in a level for a bit to find upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that struck me the most, I don't know why, was the second or third mission is like the rescue of the Nuna.
Yeah.
And it's like you're stranded.
Searching for it.
Yeah. And you like the story is that there's this, you know, freighter ship that you've got to find and then protect while it's evacuated. And I saw that mission name and I had this sense of dread hit me.
Yeah.
That it came from somewhere like long forgotten inside that I didn't remember anything about the mission. Mm-hmm. I just saw that name and was like, that motherfucker.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm looking at the manual right now and I see rescue on Kessel and I'm like, fucking that mission. That gave me fits.
Yep. Sure enough, it was the first mission I failed. So, yeah. My goodness. So that's a fun little trip down memory lane.
Go ahead, Max.
I mean, you guys are all showing me up. I could never figure out how to, is this the one where you have to like, in one of the missions do the grappling hook thing to the AT-AT's legs?
You're thinking of Shadows of the Empire.
That's right.
Okay, where the second mission was the Hoth fight. I think that there is a Hoth battle in this, but it's a bonus level.
Okay.
Yeah, you have the snow speeder is in the game. I know because the manual also has an extensive profile of every vehicle in the game. Yeah. So
I lived for that shit.
Oh, it's so good and very, very fun to have.
Oh, there's again. Even a little comic at the end of the manual. Shit.
yeah, so that's the N64 update for our house, Rogue Squadron and Mario 64.
So, Dennis, if you do feel like being evil, I linked there is a Mario 64 conspiracy wiki with 748 pages.
that game makes people insane. It's great.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah. The bottom entry is every copy of Mario 64 is personalized. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There's go figure a bunch, if that's true or not.
There's a bunch of Mario 64 like creepypastas that are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the thing about like when the speedrunner that like got through a wall because like they it wound up being like it had to be a cosmic ray hit the cartridge at the right angle at the right time.
Yeah, yeah. And now people are debunking that. Like there are other explanations. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like that as my headcanon though.
Oh yeah, just the idea of like a photon from the sun flipping a bit at just the right time. Yeah.
Yeah.
With Rogue Squadron, so we did Watch Out for Fireballs about Ace Combat 4 earlier this year, and that gave me a hankering to go back and do to go back to Rogue Squadron because of the arcade pilot game, right? That's the one that I associate with arcade flying. I'm going to warn people off of the PC version because mapping the controller is a fucking nightmare. Just emulate the N64 one. That is going to be the right way to experience it, even if the graphics are a little chunky.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, so that's N64 stuff. I also, sans any other questions, I also checked out the Battlefield 6 beta that happened this weekend.
Okay.
And, you know, the internet was abuzz with high praise for this game going in. And because they did like a big creator event before the beta, and it's the beta launch, and I'm strongly suspecting now that there's a lot more marketing speak in that versus actual opinions. Cause I don't know. I could not get into it. Hmm. It's being hailed as kind of a return to form for Battlefield. So I think there was like Battlefield 3 and 4 were like, you know, considered kind of the pinnacle of the series. Then there was like 5 and Hardline and 2042 and you know all these battlefields that just missed the mark were not considered good. 2042 in particular was just excoriated for a terrible launch and not having nearly as much content as was promised and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So Battlefield 6 is supposed to be like, hey, we're coming back to the core of what made 3 and 4 great, and this is going to be the Battlefield you know and love. But yeah, I don't know to what extent it is that Battlefield is no longer for me in a way that it was before, and how much it is that there's actual real problems with the game. Mm-hmm. Some stuff I know is real problems. For example, there's just way too many one-tap kills. Shotguns in the game are a problem. You will get killed by someone with a shotgun with zero time to react if you see them at all. And it is, they try to make it so that each class kind of specializes in a type of weapon, but most people just run around with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And in a game that's supposed to be like big theaters of warfare, everyone using the close range weapon tends to shrink things in an unpleasant way.
Yeah. Moxie, you kind of perked up at the one click kill.
I was just going to say, I am super, like, literally everything they have said about this game has been, like, kryptonite for me.
Okay.
But I will say, like, that's been Battlefield's problem since 3.
Like, really? Just time to kill being too quick?
Well, and just it being the normal gameplay experience is, like, spend 10 minutes running to the battle, get immediately killed by someone you don't see, and then you have a 10-minute run again.
Yeah. And that was very, very much my experience, which is frustrating, because if you are in a firefight or have an idea of where the enemy is and what the lines are, there can be some pretty good moments in the game. It's just so often you are flanked in a way that you, I don't know, it feels like you can't anticipate. That is just like, well, someone's going to put in the effort to get behind you no matter where you are on the map, and that person is going to find you. Yeah. And you can only hope that you do that to a couple people before someone does that to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a series that's like been in crisis. Like the last one, only 1942 was like the game that like everybody who played it really, really dug it. Starting with Battlefield 2, I've heard more people be pissed off about every individual entry, like since 2005 when Battlefield 2 came out.
I feel like some of the problem is with this scale, it's a game that requires so much of you in terms of like the before mentioned, like, you know, 5 to 10 minute run to the thing, that anything that doesn't work, it's not just like, oh, you know, I get annoyed because sometimes there's someone in the map like only using the grenade launcher. It's like, oh yeah, that happened after I spent just running around trying to get to the game.
Yeah. I think the problem of running for a long time just to get killed and you know then you get to run again is definitely present here. The other thing is that, you know, while it seems to be, you know, wants you to use the squad mechanic, like you have a set of players, whether you're queuing with friends or not, identified as your squad, and you can spawn in those people. There's benefits and like to the extent you get a score in the game beyond kills and deaths and whatever, like you get score for working with your teammates and everything. So it feels like they really want you to use the squad, but the ping system is non-existent.
Ooh.
Just like I could not ever mark what I wanted to mark or, you know, communicate what I wanted to communicate. And I wasn't about to hop on a mic. So
yeah, no, do not make your game assuming that anybody will want to be on voice chat.
Yeah. And this is a solved problem. Like after Apex Legends, there is no excuse for having a completely competent or for not having a completely competent ping system. So that just felt frustrating.
So this
I think
is,
getting to the things. Oh, go ahead.
This is even something that they have solved, because like in previous versions of the game, the way it just worked is like, you know, we have invented spy satellites and UAVs, like everyone appears on the map at all times because this isn't the Stone Age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even Battlefield 2, like I thought it was super cool because that had a squad system and like there was a squad leader who could like place orders like on a map. Like,
right, exactly.
You know, and say like, and if that person was doing a shitty job, the squad could vote to oust them and then somebody new could come in. Like, I thought that was a cool way to handle it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So branching over to stuff that might just be my opinion or the way I play games changing. You know, the main modes in this are all kind of 40-ish minute matches. And I just don't have that in me anymore.
It's pretty long.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, I will play 4 10-minute matches in a row, no problem. That doesn't faze me. I do that all the time. But having one 40-minute match, just, I don't know, it gets to a point that you feel like you are just grinding away on a foregone conclusion.
Well, yeah. You see probably about 15 minutes in, yeah, stuff's going to go bad and I'm just going to hang around. Is there any like drop penalty in this?
It's a beta.
So like, yeah.
They also, they have a like, proving grounds, or I forget what it's called, where it's like, there are fewer real players and there are more bots. And the idea is like, this is for new players to kind of get their legs under them, just understand what's going on before you're thrown in there with all real people. And I don't know if there's a penalty for leaving those either. So it's just, I definitely dropped into matches, well into them. So that, that also, you know, clearly people are leaving and, you know, getting replaced.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like when it's a 40-minute match, you can't punish leaving that badly, because the percentage chance that I get interrupted in a 40-minute run is pretty freaking high.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I just, there are modes that are shorter, like a 10-minute mode that's like a conquest or domination, whatever you want to call the capture the point stuff. But at that point, that's just worse Call of Duty.
No.
You know?
Somebody should make a Battlefield game that's just tribes.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't mind that.
See, with what you're talking about, this almost sounds to me like, have you ever considered just like, don't put other players on the other team? Like, you can't have griefing or like balance problems or stuff like that if it's not a versus mode.
Yeah, and now you're playing Darktide, so
yeah,
that's might be the right place for me to hang.
As you should be. I do love that the CEO brought this statement. It's like, oh, players are just going to have to trust us. It's like, you do realize you're EA, right?
Yeah.
At what point have you earned? Yeah. I mean, like, not even like the, you know, the publisher, like a developer of a Battlefield game. That's part of what made like the outrage over Battlefield 1 having women and black player characters. Right, so
there you go. That's the one I was like, reading. Battlefield 1.
Yeah. That was the one that got hit with a culture war kind of thing. It's just like, no, like, you're complaining about stupid shit.
I mean, the former Blizzard exec seems like maybe he's trying to make this into a culture war.
Jesus. I don't know. So yeah, the length of games is just not for me anymore. This is a stupid thing to quibble about, but the way they updated the logos, I put these in a chat, for each class is like premiumized into oblivion. So nothing makes sense.
Yeah, no, I can. God, these icons are fucking nightmares.
They are terrible. Like, so the classes are assault, support, recon, engineer, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. Support being kind of a medic resupply, you know, class. And forever in Battlefield, it's been fairly obvious. Like, assault is a picture of three bullets.
It's bullets, yeah.
But in six, it's a triangle.
Yeah, it's a triangle because it's pointy, you know, attacks.
Yeah. Of course.
Well, how pointy like attacks are.
Yeah. I don't even know what they're doing with the engineer class. It's kind of a circle, a little bit.
Each of these looks like an alternate aiming reticle that you wouldn't use because it's worse than just a crosshair.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Stop doing this, people. Like, let icons actually communicate instead of just being streamlined.
There's no shame in having the thing be the thing.
So the final thought I'll say is, you know, while there's all this going against it, when you are behind the reins of a vehicle, driving a tank or a Jeep or whatever, that does feel pretty good.
Yeah.
And just the power fantasy of being, you know, the tanks feel intimidating. And when you're the one bringing that to someone else, especially when it's like clear these people were not prepared to deal with you, that feels really, really good to just like, I am shutting down this roadway. No one comes through here. And basically, until another tank or, you know, a squad full of engineers shows up, you pretty much rule that place.
Yeah.
And that is very cool. So I don't know. Maybe I need to go play World of Tanks or something.
I do have to say, my fondest memory from a Battlefield game, also very vehicle-based, in, what is it, 2142, their sci-fi version, they had introduced, like, anti-vehicle mines that could actually, like, hover and chase you.
Okay.
And so I'm in the back of a Jeep, like facing backwards. We're booking it, and there's like, I'm watching anti-vehicle mine right behind me, and just, I'm, Jeff Goldblum, and, drive faster, drive faster.
Oh, that's great.
My favorite Battlefield vehicle memory was at the beginning of every Battlefield 2042 match, beginning with people rushing to get onto the plane, the pilot not knowing how to fly a plane, and then just killing and taking the whole team.
I do remember once I was briefly in a clan, and we're having like a practice match, and there was one member that was amazing at the fighter jet and was just racking up kills, but like at the start of the match, someone on my team had placed C4 on the plane. So after several minutes, he just activates it, and we're all on chat, and we just hear someone like cursing on on the chat.
Why? Oh, that's great. Yeah. I think, my experience, as you guys are describing, I think a lot of the best memories or best moments in the Battlefield games come when you're playing with a group of friends, when you're playing with a squad that you're actually talking with. And so, maybe you can get your mileage out of it there. Otherwise, I think it's pretty safe to ignore, at least until they get out of beta and figure out what this thing, should be. Until then, it was interesting. I won't shit on anyone for enjoying it if they did, but certainly wasn't for me. Oh, yeah. Final thought. I was talking with someone in the Slack about this. It also just feels like such a kick in the nuts to go into these gritty, realistic military sim games. And it's like, oh, you have the MP5 and the LMG and all this stuff. And it's like, and now you get to grind to unlock all the attachments for it.
Oh, yeah. It's like,
this is the fifth game that I have literally this weapon that I've got to grind into being playable. That's not fun. If you've got like some Ratchet and Clank shit, I'll play that. But otherwise, just give me the unlocks.
Yeah. No, you got to keep your KPIs up. You got to keep players hooked.
Ugh. Yeah. 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 So, that is Battlefield 6, and that's what I've been playing this week.
All right.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, money makes the world go round, and it adds some interesting flavor to games too. So the question is, what is your favorite currency from a game, and what flavor does it add to the world?
Yeah. I'll get started here with Gwen, who on our Slack says, ugh, how dare you make me praise Kingdom Hearts? But it's amusing that the currency is just called money, M-U-N-N-Y. and I think, she didn't say this, but I will add some context to that. I think the flavor that it adds, Kingdom Hearts is fucking dumb.
Oh, can't say you're wrong.
Let's see here. Ben, what does Threnza say?
Threnza says, Kingdom of Loathing's use of meat as currency remains fairly consistent with the silly world it's in, and provides a good launching point for many jokes about how you acquire, store, or spend it.
Do you have any context? Because you've played way more Kingdom of Loathing than I have, Moxie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so much. I mean, one is, you can convert meat into various items to craft things. There's there's jokes with sometimes if someone gets killed in a particularly gnarly way, you get some bonus meat. There's just jokes about like every so often they'll pull a thing where like they'll kind of do the inverse joke where your character will just be like, oh, well, yeah, I just killed a cow. So, yeah, I guess I can spend this. And people would be like, what? You barbarian. That's not spending meat.
Yeah.
Is it too low hanging fruit for people to make a bringing home the bacon joke?
Now I don't even know. Did they ever do that? That I feel sounds like them.
I feel like they would subvert it is the thing. I don't know that it would be a straight. It would be a straight one. Let's see. Moxie, what does Winter say?
Winter says, Zenny. I remember it from Capcom Surreal Arcade Shooter. Forgotten Worlds, where it just seemed like the cherry on top of the random cultural pastiche that was 80s arcade games. 9-year-old me wondered if Zenny was a friend of the programmers. Probably a fun guy at parties.
They're really giving it to the Spiro Agnew guy. I wonder if he works there. So Zenny was going to be one of mine because like Zenny isn't just in that arcade game. Like for decades, if a Capcom game has had currency in it, it has most likely been called Zenny. I know it primarily from Breath of Fire, but it's also the currency in Mega Man Legends. I think that it's a currency in Monster Hunter as well. It's not like a flavor thing. It's literally just like, I think it's cool for a company to have it that standardized, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the name is a reference to Zenny, an Edo era designation for common coinage that eventually became a byword for all forms of cash and an inspiration for a number of fictional currencies. So yeah.
Huh.
I like it. Back here so I can get the next response. Oh, VG Robot in the chat also said Zenny as well. Mm-hmm. Down here, Wetty Eggs on Blue Sky gave the money one as well. MUNNY, Kingdom Hearts 1. Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says Gil, specifically in Final Fantasy 16, has a whole codex entry. In need of a standardized currency, the realms asked the most prominent merchant guild to mint one, and they named the coin after their legendary founder, Gilbard. Mm-hmm. Gil in general is pretty fun.
Yeah.
I like that.
And that's one that, I mean, extends throughout most of Final Fantasy. I don't know exactly when it started. At a certain point, it was like GP for gold points, and then it flipped over to be Gil. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny because Final Fantasy 16 is definitely not the first one to have it, but I wonder if it's the first one to give an explanation.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm sure there was something in a codex somewhere elsewhere. Let's see. Chicken Riggies in the Slack says simoleons from The Sims. Also a funny repurposing of a real term.
Huh.
Yeah.
I can't hear that and not think Cimmerillion. What is
simoleon? Simoleons. It's kind of like somebody saying smackaroos. Like it'll cost you 50 clams. It's like an old timey term. Yeah, for simoleons. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Ben, what does Robinson say?
Yeah, Double Cake says I think about porno mags quite a bit.
That's not the full sentence.
Sorry. I missed some text in between there. My bad. They say, I think about porno mags being the currency of Lisa, the painful RPG, quite a bit. There we go.
Yeah. It's, it takes place in a world with no women. So it's all just a bunch of dudes passing around used up porno. Yeah. Oh, man. Let's see. Moxie, what's Callum say?
Callum says, caps in Fallout. They fit very well in the tone of the world and are used in fun ways. Disarm the bottle cap mine, get a small cash injection. Keeping the cap after drinking a new Coca-Cola is also a cute touch.
Yeah. That was also the answer from Matt in the Slack saying, also I heard the Metro series uses ammo as a as a currency, which is neat. That's a cool way to do it. That money ammo is more effective.
Yeah, because it's military grade ammo
and not a repack. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, what does Troy say?
Troy says, all the currency in blueprints, gems, keys, gold, and especially steps. Balancing these resources during every run is a super fun challenge because the value of each one changes depending on what you're trying to do. They're also smartly integrated into the lore and world. And then a very specific call out, tell them, Ben.
I like how they know our pattern, where if there's somebody who has the additional context. Are steps things you can recover? I thought that was just like your health.
You can eat food to get more steps. It's like your energy, kind of.
Okay.
Also, there are certain rooms that every time you walk through the room, you get steps.
Yeah, you can get or lose. Yeah, it's weird because for me, it's like I just see blueprints as like a board game with all those like resources and how they feed into one another. So it's like it's weird to think of it in the video game context a little bit.
Yeah, world's weirdest Fitbit tie-in.
And the final response here is actually one that was alluded to in the Slack. Eggy Wets says,
distinct from wetty eggs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Is that, Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That was later on, the next one that I already read. Anyway, Eggy Wets says, in the Metro games, you use bullets as currency. Every shot you fire comes directly from your wallet. It also adds to the post-apocalyptic feeling.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love that it plays into the mechanic. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're asking about a Kingdom of Loathing joke. This one's maybe a little borderline off color, but I do recall there's a dumb joke where if you want to change your character's gender, you can go to a doctor and get gender affirming care.
Okay.
And the specific message is you hand over your meat. Also, you pay him.
Oh my gosh.
Pretty good.
My answer on this, it was going to be Zenny, but I will say that my favorite currency is actually a barter system. I just adore that in Pathologic, the primary way of getting medication, of getting like morphine and pills, is to trade sharp objects to little kids. There's all kinds of like different different NPC types. Drunkards want water. They all have their own things that they're kind of looking for in trade. But very specifically, that you're giving like rusty fish hooks and razor blades to kids so they can give you morphine. Like, I love that as just a piece of flavor, but also to show just like how desperate and fucked the situation is. And also the fact that it's these sharp objects are kind of like forbidden, because it is forbidden to break the skin in the culture of the town too.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Ben, strange currency.
Yeah, I'm just going to double down on the Caps and Fallout answer, just because I feel like that's one of the best currencies that like elaborates on the lore of the world. So I couldn't think of a better example.
It's also a good, because like there's only a finite number of them. It's hard to counterfeit. Like it makes sense in the fiction, too.
Mm-hmm. It just always makes me want a sarsaparilla.
God, nothing makes me not want a sarsaparilla, actually. I could fuck up a sarsaparilla right now. Moxie, how about you?
So this is one of the few multiplayer questions I immediately had an answer for. So I recall a while back when Destiny 2 first came out, we got talking on here, and Kate, you were making fun about the fact that the currency in this game is called Glimmer. And it's this like, programmable matter or something. You just joke about how incredibly generic that is.
Okay.
And so then the next day I'm playing, and there's a sequence where two of the NPCs do the whole like, oh, you survived. I guess such and such owes me $10. That joke.
Yeah.
Except they just straight up, it's like, oh, you survive. I guess she owes me money. Like, just straight up like, oh yeah, it sounds like bullshit to you guys too.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. You owe me ten money.
I love that, just declaring defeat on it. It's like, okay, yeah, it's just cash. It's dollars, everybody. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with orbs from Devil May Cry.
Okay.
Love me a good orb.
Yeah. Just in general. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Anywhere, but especially here. For anyone who hasn't seen, they are these kind of like, it varies game to game. They get a redesign each time, but like a droplet or a gem that has some kind of face on it, and there's different colors. And I think it's just fascinating to see game by game how they change. Mm-hmm. They're always like some level of derpy.
Yeah, the DMC one, because that's the only one of these games I've played. The DMC one version is really dorky.
Mm-hmm. I think the only one that rivals it is DMC 4, where it's just these. I think what could be accurately described as a chungus groaning.
Okay.
So yeah, very 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 fun stuff.
I was trying to think. I feel like you'd be the person to answer this. What in Ratchet and Clank, is it just like bolts or something?
Yep, bolts.
So from like Clank's perspective, is that just like body parts?
to my knowledge, I don't think they've ever commented on it. But that also feels like something they would make a joke out of. Mm. I know you upgrade stuff and it hinges on the fact that bolts are magnetic, so it makes it easier to grab money because they get drawn into you from further away.
Yeah,
the DMC orbs.
Yeah, the DMC 4 one is very it's making that sound. Good question. Fun question, fun answers. If you would like to participate in these, go on Blue Sky and follow at the level podcast.bsky.social and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thank you, Dennis, for posting.
Of course. The end
boss. Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Let's see here, Dennis, I'm just going to go in the order that we posted these. What is happening with Doom?
Yeah. So, the Dark Ages, the latest entry has been pretty well received, and it is getting a new update that should be very fun to play with called the Ripatorium, which is probably the most Doom name that has ever been named.
Okay.
This is not the first game to have this mode. Apparently, Doom Eternal had like a section of a level where you could do this, but now it's broken out and available to just go straight to. It is basically a build your own encounter mode. So you load it up. You can select up to 60 enemies to do battle with, choose what type. Difficulty, you can adjust all these things for difficulty level, and then jump into the level and try to survive it. And so I feel like a whole bunch of people are going to find out how much thought goes into encounter design.
can you affect like placement and like the order that they come out in waves, or is it just you select them and they appear?
Yeah, it doesn't look like that, and I haven't played it, so I can't say for sure.
Okay.
But yeah. It seems like it's kind of just populates them throughout the level, mm-hmm. throughout the arena, I should say.
Seems like a Doom version of like setting up danger room scenarios.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. And so if you ever wanted to go up against 60 beholders at once, here you go.
Catco demons.
Good
please.
Luck. Oh, okay. Because we all know what they are, though.
One has tentacle eyes. The other one, they're different enough.
No. You knew what I meant, and that the point of language is communication. So
no, that's a lie.
Furiously trying to backpedal out of that error.
Yeah, nobody's ever said that before.
Yeah. So I don't know if there will be any kind of leaderboard or bespoke challenges or whatever to go with it. Mm-hmm. It's a free update. So just a nice thing to add into the game. And we'll see what comes of it. But yeah, cool of them to kind of toss a little extra to the people who enjoyed the game.
Yeah, sounds neat.
Mm-hmm. There is an endless mode, and I'm not sure how that works. If it just keeps on throwing random enemies, or you specify what enemies and then it loops it, or I don't know what. But it seems maybe it's got a little bit of a horde mode to it as well.
Mm-hmm. Does the mecha play into any of this? Like, can you have, you know, random repertorium with the mecha?
Ooh, that would be fun. That did feel good to run around in that thing.
Yeah. I'll do mine. This is going to be real quick. Sometime last week, there was a trailer released. Does anybody remember Red Octane Games?
No.
Red Octane was one of the two teams that worked on the original two Guitar Hero games.
Holy shit. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Red Octane. It was like Red Octane and Harmonix. Red Octane kind of primarily making the working on the guitars, and Harmonix kind of bringing in the note chart kind of configuration from frequency and amplitude. Is what they are. So like, they've not been a factor at all, but apparently they're working on rhythm games again. They're saying that there's going to be a new one coming out, or at least being announced a little bit later this year. And they say it's not going to be like a plastic guitar, you know, like, you know, Guitar Hero, or I guess now the only like thing that is currently commercially like that is Fortnite Festival, for as much as everybody has heard about and loves Fortnite Festival.
Oh goodness.
I'm curious. I want more rhythm games. And I don't know. I anytime somebody says, what kind of game do you want to see come back, or what do you miss? Like, yeah, you know, rhythm games. I like the peripheral based ones, but I'm curious to see what they still have in them.
So hear me out.
Okay.
Go for it.
A plastic trumpet peripheral for Ska Hero.
But you got covered in grease, so you always have to pick it up. You're dropping it a lot because of the grease, you see.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So is just a thing might eventually happen. Go ahead, Dennis.
There's a quote at the bottom of this that, they're talking about, oh, this is going to be something new and different. And they say, this won't be Guitar Hero. Yep. Know that one. DJ Hero. Huh? Mm-hmm. Rock Band. Huh? Or Guitar Freaks. I haven't heard of that one before.
Guitar Freaks. I think that might be Konami one. Guitar Freaks.
Is it? Yeah, I'm seeing like PlayStation, like original PlayStation.
Yeah, one. Yeah. Like that was a so that was part of the Bimani line of Konami games. It was an arcade game, and there were versions for the PlayStation. Bimani is like the same line of games that has Dance Dance Revolution in it.
Oh, okay. So this would have predated Guitar Hero then.
Yes. Yeah. Guitar Hero was 2005. I think the first Guitar Freaks was 1999. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can see Dottie sitting on top of the chair.
Cat.
Yeah. Cat. Sorry.
Okay. I've been jonesing to see Dottie since I was over there and didn't. So.
No. She hides.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So now we know it's, we technically... You know, we have to get the dividing line of like, to what degree does this count as us being here? Therefore, she hides.
She's not really aware. She's just kind of perched on top of my other office chair here in my office. So
it's like a gargoyle right now.
She does. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I fear for you, Kay. It looks like it's going to be like a leap. Oh, no, she went down. Okay. Yeah, it looked like she was going to like leap from one chair to the other or to your shoulder.
Yeah, she's not a shoulder cat.
Okay.
Ben, what's happening with the Resident Evil movie?
Yeah, this is a nice bookend to the opening. There's going to be a new Resident Evil movie coming out next year, and it's going to be directed by Zach Krieger, the person who wrote and directed Weapons and Barbarian. I think the main line item right now is it's going to be an original story, but it's going to be like in the same universe and try and be basically a spiritual sort of successor and translation to what the game experience is, where it's like going on an adventure from point A to point B and fighting a lot of zombies on the way, that sort of thing. Yeah, so I guess I was more interested in this story from like the movie perspective of like, oh, this will be interesting to see what they do with, as they describe it, like a turn your mind off, like action type movie, given that their last two movies are more like pretty heavily laden in like theme. And and then I think they've already said in interviews too, they have like two other movies that they've written that they're planning on doing after this one that are more like original scripts and more return to form of what they've done in the last two movies. But
yeah,
this is an interesting little interlude.
Knowing their background in comedy, this feels like it could be a pretty good, you know,
fit. Yeah.
You don't uppercut a boulder with a straight face.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know about the games, but the Resident Evil movies are, you know, the height of filmmaking, and they truly capture the human experience.
So that is a space alien opinion that you have had forever.
I will still say nothing will ever beat the Play Dead.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, there's the Wesker cosplay that started happening in that. So yeah, I'm curious about it. Obviously, I like that. I like that director. I like Zach Krieger. He's good. People are guessing about like what character is going to be, but I don't know.
It makes it sound like it's not going to be anyone we're really familiar with, or I wouldn't be surprised if it were a completely new character.
But it's going to follow the merchant.
Oh, dude, I would watch that.
I kind of would. Show me how he gets around.
Yeah.
And also, just, you know, it's cool to see a creator that I like get a project that they're very much, it's very clearly like a fan of, like very enthusiastic about it. And Moxie, I don't see a link here. Do you have a story for us?
No, I've.
That's okay.
World events have, you know, kind of, yeah.
Shit's kind of popping off in DC. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. Well, how does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
This button.
Buttons.
Oh, we can all like thumbs up it on the video screen here.
Just more nonverbal cool. communication. Let's load as much of that in as we can.
Yes.
The credit.
I'm realizing how much I gesture now that I can see it. So thank you so much for listening to level number 554. We really appreciate you taking the time joining us. I want to say again that I am going to be in Portland for the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, October the 17th, 18th, and 19th. Details forthcoming on the panel time and day, and also when our meetup is going to be. It'll be in the evening on either probably Saturday, because people tend to leave on Sunday. So watch the usual social media channels for that. Otherwise, if you want to help out the shows, we don't do this an awful lot, but I would say leave a rating or review. Like we throw it off, and you know, just like, hey, you know what podcasts are. It really does help with discoverability. Also, you know, people sometimes go in and leave bullshit reviews about our politics and stuff. If you can actually comment on the substance of the shows with a good review and drown all that out, that would be amazing for me. But there's all the usual stuff, telling your friends, and mostly just coming back next week. Is there anything I'm forgetting here? Okay. Well, I've been Kay. You can find me at K.Zone on Blue Sky.
I've been Dennis Furia. I'm on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I've been Moxie. You can find me under Martial Law.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I only have one that I wrote down in a panic because it was near the end of the episode. So it's one of mine. Pointy like attacks are.
So I had that, but let me figure out where I put it. Okay. Yeah, I just had pointy like attacks, but same idea.
I like the dangling R at the end of that.
Yeah. And I also had just not even as a joke.
I really sounded angry when I said that.
That was the intended effect.
Let me write that down. Not even. Okay. Ben, do you have anything?
Got nothing.
Okay. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I went on a tear. All right, okay. I got a bunch. Stinky masochist. Insane exile jail. Okay. 21 blunderbuss salute. And then I have D&D and SCP.
D&D and...
Styles the ampersands.
Yes.
And then another late entry that made me giggle was nothing makes me not want a sarsaparilla.
Okay. You're lucky that I know how to spell sarsaparilla.
Dude, I got so caught up by that with the red line that would not go away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I tell you, all this AI on your phone bullshit, you think they could figure out what I'm trying to spell?
Yeah. Come on. You can surveil me, but you can't be helpful. Cool. By laughs, not even as a joke, gets it.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Okay. All right. It is decided.